What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the FanCast Movies Podcast. We are a podcast about movies, and you can find us on Fandango.com. We are also on Movies.com. We are also on Audioboo, who we have to thank for hosting this audio. And we're on Twitter, too. Myself, at Eric Davis, and my co-host, Sean O'Connell. I should just refer to you this whole podcast, Sean, by your Twitter handle. So I should just say, hello, Sean, at Sean underscore O'Connell.
The dreaded underscore.
The underscore always screws people up. When you tell people your email, you know, if you ever have like an underscore in your email, is that a hard thing? I've always felt like I once had something with an underscore in it. I tried to tell underscore, and they're like, oh, is what, U-N-D-E-R? No.
I mean, I'd like to believe that enough people have to use it nowadays that it's pretty popular or common, but yeah, it's really annoying. And now that everybody's getting verified, like, other movie bloggers are lobbying to become verified, and I can't even process that.
Is there a lobby you can go? Is there a lobby you can go to?
Yes,
to get verified. I have no idea. I don't even know anything, and I don't know what that does. Does that if you have a little check mark next to your name, that means?
It just means you're special.
Just means you're special.
Yeah,
you're verified.
You get access to the VIP lounge on Twitter. Apparently,
nobody cares if I'm verified.
I care.
I'll verify. How about I verify you?
Fair enough.
I'm verifying Sean. This is Sean O'Connell that I'm talking to. And you could just verify that it's me.
I will return the favor. This is definitely Eric Davis.
We're both verified. There you go. That's why you need to be listening to this podcast. We're both verified. We're both excited. This is the last month of the year. This is one of those months where it's just like it always feels like Hollywood likes to take the holidays off. And so they just cram everything in to the first part of December. Movies are screening like crazy. Critics groups are voting like mad. We're starting to see the first, you know, little sprinkles of people giving out awards. American Hustle, most notably, won this week, won the big New York Film Critics Award for their Best Picture. Gotham Awards were also held.
Well, I mean, just that does seem crazy. And you've seen American Hustle, and maybe it is the best picture of the year. But does it not feel like they just like saw it one day and then voted the next day? And when they were like, "What was that movie we just watched?"
I'll be honest with you, Sean. All of these awards are a little bit crazy, right, in my opinion. You know, I remember, you know, and we're going to talk about upcoming December movies, what you have to see. But first, let's just touch on the awards fast. You know, it's funny. I grew up in a house when I was very young. My mother loved watching the Oscars, the Golden Globes, all that stuff. My father would always leave the room. He'd always get really upset. And I'd watch with my mom, and we'd watch the celebrities and everything. And I'd always be like, "Well, why?" You know, I'd go to my father, "But why are you so upset? Why can't you watch this?" And he just never agreed with the fact that you had to pick a winner.
Right.
You know, he always like, "I'm good with nominating." You know, saying these are the best of the year, and then leave it at that. But when you have to kind of – when you get down to it and you have to say, no, we have to pick a winner. We have to say that out of all these awesome movies, one is the best one. And he never agreed with that. And it's something that stuck with me. I don't really agree with it. I wish we could just leave it at nominations. But there's too much noise to be made about who should win. And I think
Yeah. Like AFI does a 10 list, you know, like their list at the end of the year is these are the most notable films.
I
totally
that.
Agree with you. Yeah, that's great. So, and the thing that annoys me too about it is that often they're all voting on these movies that you haven't seen yet. Like they come out yesterday and they're like, American Hustle is the best movie of the year. And most people listening to this podcast, they can't agree with it because they haven't seen it yet and might not see it for weeks.
Exactly. I mean, it comes out December 20th. If you're lucky enough to be in New York and L.A., you get to see it on December 13th. But right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, there are all these – and people may be a little confused when they start hearing, oh, this one is nominated. This one is – I think Wolf of Wall Street was nominated for something and nobody's even seen that yet.
Right.
But it's like – It's just all political. That's what it comes down to. If you're curious about the whole process, you know, a lot of these critics groups sort of try to one-up each other by being the first one out of the gate, because there are a lot of critics groups all over the country. And in about a week or two, you're going to start seeing every day, Dallas, Chicago, this one, that one, that one. And so there's this jockey to be first.
Right.
And when you jockey to be first, you kind of keep inching up that date of your voting. And because of that, you know, none of these films have really screened yet. And so it's just this weird process. It's all very political. It's nothing that you should worry about. What you should be doing is listening to Sean and I, because we're about to tell you which movies to go see this December.
Well, and that doesn't mean that we're not going to do our own top 10, and that we can be bought, too. So if studios want to buy our votes, you know, we're open to that.
Yeah, I'll take anything. I'll take the I'll take a cashier's check, straight deposit. Han Solo's original gun from Star Wars is on the docket. You could buy that. I'll take that.
Yeah. Eric will turn around and tell you that The Hangover Part 3 is the best movie of the year if you give him the Han Solo blaster.
Best movie of the year, by far, hands down. Just nothing even came close. In fact, The Hangover Part 3 should just be in theaters every single weekend. Because why even put up competition?
Exactly.
Why even do it? Sean, December, big month, end of the year. We're going to be a lot of wrapping things up. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of looking back at the best movies of the year. But there's a lot of great stuff coming out. I think what we're going to do here is we're going to pick three movies each that you should go see.
Okay.
And beyond that, you know what? It's going to be up to you. I leave it in your hands to watch trailers and figure out which of these movies appeal to you. But we'll give you six titles that you won't be let down, that will give you something, I hope, I think.
Yes.
Maybe a couple of these titles that we haven't seen, but we'll be recommending them because of the pedigree, because of who's behind them, because of what they look like, at least in previews. So, Sean, I've been rambling. You go first. What's your first December movie that people should go see?
I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to pick something that I've been lucky enough to see, and I'm going to pick something that's so mainstream and across the board successful that I think no matter who you are, you'll like it, and it's called Saving Mr. Banks. It's Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson telling the behind-the-scenes story of the making of Mary Poppins, the rocky road that this story took to becoming the classic movie that is adored and beloved, and it pushes all the right buttons and pulls all the right strings in playing to how complicated the process can be to get a story to the screen. And what's funny about it is Hanks has a small role as Walt Disney, and it's really Emma Thompson's story. And she plays P.L. Travers, who wrote the Mary Poppins stories. And Disney promised his daughters that he'd bring these stories, these books that they love, to the screen. But when he approaches her, he just assumes that, you know, everyone loves Disney and the Disney magic is just going to work on her automatically. And she thinks that everything Disney does is too rudimentary. She has no interest in cartoons. She doesn't want Mary Poppins to be a musical. She wants no animation to be involved in it at all. And it's just the way that these two butt heads and hold true to their creative beliefs, you know, to make sure. And it's kind of funny because we know that it's going to work, and we know that eventually the movie's going to get there. But there are reasons why this author didn't want these characters that she wrote about to be portrayed on screen in certain ways. And I think that's really the heart of the story. Obviously, the acting is great. Emma Thompson's fantastic in it. It's got a really good supporting cast. But if you're interested in movies and just how difficult it might be to even bring something that looks like such a bona fide home run as Mary Poppins to the screen, like, there are people who just believe that it was going to flop, which is really funny. I think that it's told in a really interesting way, in a way that can appeal to people who love going to the movies and who love finding out, like, how movies come together. You know, I think it could be a strong Oscar contender, but it was just, to me, it was just a really entertaining, fun, heartwarming movie that I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, and it's an interesting story. This is the first time, I think, anybody's played Walt Disney in a movie, right? Tom Hanks?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure, yeah. I mean, and if you're going to pick anybody to do it, it would be Hanks. He's really good. And it's not that he's ever doing, like, a Walt Disney impersonation. He's still Tom Hanks. But they use him in the right moments and pick the right spots. Because, like I said, it really is Emma Thompson's movie. But when he comes in, it's always for something really, really important. And it helps move the story along.
Saving Mr. Banks, in case you're curious, it hits limited release in December 13th. And then it expands nationwide on December 20th. That's what happens in December a lot, because you have a lot of these awards movies kind of jockeying for positions in order to be screened for critics to vote and yada yada. So you have a lot of them that open up in limited release earlier in the month, but then expand nationwide later in the month, some even into January. There are a couple of movies that we were going to mention on this list, Her and August Osage County, both come out in limited release in December, but then expand in early January. So that's why we're not going to mention the ones expanding in early January, because we want to pick movies that all of you can go see,
sure.
Not just movies that people in New York and LA can go see. So my first movie is going to be – I'm going to go in order here. I'm going to go with The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
Oh, okay.
And it's interesting. I saw this movie in the theaters when it first came out, and I was iffy on it. I was like, oh, it's a little long. I don't know. It had a different sensibilities than the Lord of the Rings franchise, and I think a lot of people went into this first Hobbit movie kind of expecting a Lord of the Rings experience, quote unquote. And this was sort of a different movie. It was a little bit lighter, a little bit funnier, I think. And did it take itself as serious as at least the first Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. movie did. I watched it again this past weekend because I'm going to see Desolation of Smaug this week, and I really enjoyed it. You know, I actually broke it up at home. I watched it in an hour and a half increments. I watched the first hour and a half one day, and then the second hour and a half the next day.
Wait,
and
you mean the first Hobbit? Are you talking about the first Hobbit?
The first Hobbit.
Okay, that's Desolation of Smaug is the new one.
Yeah, I'm going to see that this week. So I watched the first Hobbit
gotcha.
This past weekend in anticipation of seeing the second one, just to refresh my memory. You know, there's 5,700 dwarves in it and all this kind of madness. And I wanted to watch it again and say, okay, this is where everybody's at in this adventure. Now I can go in with that fresh in my mind to go see Desolation of Smaug. And I highly suggest that. The Hobbit's all over HBO right now. And you can find it. I highly suggest watching that movie right before you go see Desolation of Smaug. And I really enjoyed it a lot more. You know, I think it has a lot more action than the first Lord of the Rings movie did, if we're comparing, you know, opening movie to opening movie. And it just kind of moves, you know. And I really enjoyed it. Once they kind of get out of – once they're all on their quote-unquote adventure –
right.
It kind of just really moves, you know. And my friend made a good point. He says, I felt like the first Lord of the Rings movie had a lot more practical effects than this first Hobbit movie. And that might be the case. But I really enjoyed it. I think it got some bad flack. And, you know, if we're looking at the two franchises, The Two Towers, the second Lord of the Rings movie, was my favorite Lord of the Rings movie. I feel like – and this we can go back to Catching Fire as well. The part two – you know, you always have a great chance to be – that's the best movie of your bunch. You don't have to begin anything. You don't have to end anything. You can just tell a badass adventure story in your part two. That's why I'm anticipating this movie the most out of all three of these Hobbit films. I think it's going to be the one that fans like the most. I think it's going to be the most exciting, exhilarating to watch. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's good. And I think I really like the way the first Hobbit ended. I think it ended with a lot of heart. I liked the sort of the evolution of Martin Freeman's character in that film, from looking at this band of rowdy dwarfs as a bunch of guys that have no place to go, and kind of starting to kind of come around and feeling like, you know what, you have no place to go. I'm going to help you find a place to go and to call your home. And that's why I'm on this adventure. And I like that sort of evolution of his character and the way it ended. And I'm really looking forward to the second one.
Well, plus the new one has a freaking dragon, and he's voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch. What more do you need?
Exactly. Yeah, if you watch Game of Thrones and you're kind of jonesing for more dragon action, you have a giant badass dragon in this next Hobbit movie, and Benedict Cumberbatch. Exactly. I mean, if anybody has the perfect voice for a dragon, it's him.
I'm in for that alone. So
yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that. That goes nationwide December 13th. There's no limited. It's just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. There's also a super ticket for sale on Fandango, which is a thing that's starting to come around now a lot more with these super tickets. And I'm for them, I think. I think anything that sort of enhances the experience of watching a movie in the theater, if you're a fan of this particular franchise and you want your experience of watching this film enhanced, then sure. You know, here, you know, spend another 15, 20 $20, get some guineas with it, and you know, maybe you'll have a more memorable movie-going experience. So you can get a super ticket for The Hobbit 2 over on Fandango, and there'll be a lot of information as to what goes along with it. So moving on, your second most anticipated December movie that people need to see.
Also a sequel. It has to be Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues. And, you know, Mark Duplass, the actor, writer, director, tweeted very subtly the other day, he must have seen it, that he thinks it tops the original. And that's a tall order, because the original is a ton of fun.
That is a tall order, because the original just kind of comes out of nowhere. You know, I compared it to Caddyshack the other day, because Caddyshack is another movie where it's just like quotable line after quotable line after quotable line. It's just this barrage of just awesome, you know, lines that hit you.
And it's memorable character after memorable character, too. Like, you can pick all the guys out of Caddyshack, and they all get their moments to shine. And I think Anchorman has that also. And the reason why I'm excited about the second one is that they've added almost every other amazingly funny person that wasn't in the first one and just surrounded these other guys. Like, and it's people that obviously, like, Kristen Wiig's hysterical, and you know, you're going to get Vince Vaughn coming back as Wes Mantooth, and but they're leaning on people like James Marsden, who can be really funny. They have random cameos that we've heard about. People like Harrison Ford is going to find a way into this somehow.
Kanye West, I think.
Right. If you take a look at the IMDb page for it, I don't know how much of this is accurate, but there's names like Liam Neeson and Sacha Baron Cohen and Tina Fey. And this could all be garbage. Who knows? But I kind of want to go just to see who shows up. How many people just keep popping into scenes for this? Plus, I just think that, you know, Will Ferrell has not done sequels. He's rolled out these completely original characters, and then he's really good about just moving on to the next one. But clearly the clamor for the Anchorman, you know, sequel was so loud that he and Adam McKay just couldn't ignore it. I love the idea of moving it to New York and plugging him into a 24-hour news cycle. And I just feel like it's going to be one of these ones that captures everybody's attention. You know, like the first one, people warmed up to it eventually, and it probably did more life on home video as people started to realize how sort of surreal it is. And if they have to feel like they need to top that one, I can only imagine the places that they go. So I can't wait for Anchorman 2, and I'm sure everybody listening to this probably feels the same way.
I agree. I like the way these guys shoot their movies. You know, of course, we mentioned Caddyshack. We can go back and look at Caddyshack 2 and be like, not really. Didn't really hold up. But these guys shoot their movies. They shoot so much footage of each scene and just different deliveries for everything. I don't know how they edit these things together. Adam McKay always says they have an entire movie's worth of extra footage. I actually think they're coming out with a Blu-ray for Anchorman right before the first Anchorman. And there is. It's like this entire lost movie of other footage from the first Anchorman that they can put together. So that's how much they're shooting. And you know, and they have just these great sensibilities, and so they plug in just the best stuff. And if you love the first Anchorman, I don't know if you, how you can't. It's one of those great comedies. I think that we have. You have to see the second one. And bringing it back around to the super ticket, there's an Anchorman 2 super ticket actually just went on sale too. And there's a funny video that Will Ferrell shot for Fandango. Go over to Fandango and see what that super ticket's about. If that interests you, you get to see the movie early. What's up? My second pick.
Yes.
Is American Hustle. I've seen American Hustle. So I can
show pick off.
I can recommend it. I can highly recommend the movie. I actually have a review of it up on movies.com if you're interested in reading it. But yeah, really liked American Hustle, you know? And it's getting some mixed kind of reactions from the first crowd that saw it, then to the next crowd that saw it. And I don't know, if some of these people, I feel like they just come out and if something's getting highly praised, they watch a movie and they sit down and they look for reasons not to like it. I don't know. Whatever shtick people go into movies with, it's not my shtick. I watched this. I liked it a lot. Maybe it's because I'm from New York. It's a very New York movie. It's based on the Abscam scandal from the late 1970s. If you're not familiar with that scandal, it's really weird. Basically, the FBI, they catch this low-level con man in Long Island, and instead of prosecuting him, they make him an offer for him to help them set up a scam to entrap greedy politicians. The whole thing was just really weird and seedy to begin with, because they were, in essence, creating a fictional character in order to entrap people. But nevertheless, it was the late 70s in New York, and it was just kind of gonzo period for everybody back then. And so this is loosely based. It's a fictionalized telling. David O. Russell, who directs, he did Silver Linings Playbook, he did The Fighter. He creates, he invents some characters that didn't really exist back then. But the meat and bones of the story actually really happened. And all four of them are in it. It's like the Avengers of David O. Russell movies, basically. he's got his duo from The Fighter, Christian Bale and Amy Adams. He's got his duo from Silver Linings Playbook, Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper. All four of them. He brings back Robert De Niro. He's in a small role. So it's just like he's plucking from his best of the. You know, there's no Mark Wahlberg. He's the only one that probably should be in there somewhere. But you know what? It's really great. It's got some rocky story issues, but other than that. You just love watching this foursome. They're just so good in their roles. Their hair is great. The music is great. There's a lot of New York attitude and New York flavor. If you like that kind of stuff, you'll love American Hustle. So, yeah, I highly recommend seeing it. Sean, what is your...
Wait, I have two quick questions before you go off of that.
Here comes.
You tweeted a movie that I keep thinking of when I see American Hustle, and it's Goodfellas. Mm-hmm. Is it really of that tone?
I think it's got flavors of Goodfellas. And when I say Goodfellas, it's because the way David O. Russell shoots it, I feel like he does channel Martin Scorsese in a lot of ways, from the music cues to the New York quote-unquote characters to the witty banter between these characters. You know, right. you look at Goodfellas, you look at scenes like when Pesci's in the restaurant saying, you know, you think I'm a clown, and there's a lot of layers to that scene of these really angry guys that are joking at the same time. There's that sort of flavor in this film. And it's funny, I said it was Goodfellas meets Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, because you have that you have that sort of essence of this film where every character is conning someone else also conning themselves. And so it's really a con man movie, which Goodfellas was. It was more of a mobster, hardcore mobster movie. But the essence of Goodfellas, from the voiceovers, you know, of characters sort of saying, and then I walked in a room, and then there she was, and Amy Adams slowly turns around, and there's a classic rock song playing. I mean, it's just that's vintage Scorsese, and that's who he channels in this movie. And it makes sense. I mean, Scorsese is a very New York director. The movie's a very New York movie, so it makes sense to channel Scorsese. But that's what I felt in terms of Goodfellas.
All right, I'll ask him my other question later when we get into it, because we're running out of time. My third one is going to be. A movie that I just saw yesterday, and I am oddly enough all over it. And it's called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It's Ben Stiller's next directorial effort, and it is a remake or an adaptation of a story that's been around for a long, long time and was told with Danny Kaye back in the 1940s, I believe, 40s or 50s, and I'm blanking on the date. But it's about a guy, an office drone who works for Life magazine, played by Ben Stiller, who has these little daydreams that he loses himself in. You know, he's kind of at one point he's described in the picture as like a tiny gray piece of paper, and that's the best way to sort of sum him up. He's just not there, but he's attracted to this girl in his office, played by Kristen Wiig, and he's inspired to go on a journey to find this missing photograph that's supposed to be the cover of the last issue of Life magazine. And he's, partners with a guy who's a world traveling photographer, played by Sean Penn. And that character's name in this film, I kid you not, is Sean O'Connell. And the weirdest thing in the world to hear your name used over and over again in a movie. And it's something I knew was going to happen. Like, it's in the trailer, the first extended trailer that came out recently.
That would freak
And me out. My wife cracked up watching it. Adam Scott, you know, has this big speech where he's like, we have the privilege of running the last photograph shot by Sean O'Connell. But, like, everything in this movie is like, you need to find Sean O'Connell. Do you know where Sean O'Connell is? Have you seen Sean O'Connell? And it's like, it's just strange. It's surreal. Outside of selfishly liking it for that reason, it was a really fun story to see Ben Stiller sort of attack. I think as a director, he's underrated. I liked everything that he's done up to this point. Cable Guy was a great movie. He did Reality Bites. He did Tropic Thunder, which I think is a really it's not underrated. I think enough people appreciate the sort of brilliance of Tropic Thunder. This is a lot more mainstream for him, and it says a lot of interesting things about just appreciating what you have done in life and what you still need to do, But it's definitely, it's PG, and it's geared at a mainstream audience, and it has some really good performances by Stiller, by Kristen Wiig. They form a great connection. And the way that he takes people into Walter Mitty's daydreams has some great transition scenes, and I could definitely recommend this movie. I liked it. It wasn't what I was expecting at all, but I think that's why I keep sort of thinking about it and coming back around to it. I think that people need to check it out.
You know, I like movies like that. I like movies that sort of stop you and say, you know, pay attention to the moment. Pay attention to your life and live every moment to its fullest. There's another film from early in the year called Francis Ha that I just fell in love with because it's all about that. It's about this character where and bad thing after bad thing after bad thing happens to her, but she's always present in those situations. Is she always present in every moment in her life? And I really think, you know, this has been a season, a fall season, an award season full of movies about surviving. You know, you gotta survive.
Right.
And, you know, I think that we should do less surviving and more living. And I think that's sort of what it seems like Walter Mitty is about. And I like movies like that, especially movies where we have all these survival movies. We should have movies about kind of living for the moment and living for the day.
You're going to dig it, dude. You'll give it a try. You're really going
to
like
it. Oh, I'll definitely give it a try. I'm really looking forward to it. My third movie, because we are running out of time, is come on. I'm a New York kid. Who do you think? What do you think my third movie is going to be? I talked that much about Scorsese. What do you think my third movie is going to be? It's going to be The Wolf of Wall Street. It comes out nationwide December 25th, which also leads me to tell you, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty is also out nationwide on December 25th. But yeah, it's The Wolf of Wall Street. Goodfellas is one of my favorite movies of all time. We just talk about some of the ways it feels like it was injected into American Hustle. This feels like Scorsese returning to that format that he did with Goodfellas and Casino, but applying it to Wall Street. And so in lieu of the nasty violence that you get in those two movies, you'll get that the sex and the debauchery that sort of plagued these guys on Wall Street. If you ever saw the movie Boiler Room with Vin Diesel, which I really like, it's got one Ben Affleck's greatest speech as an actor is in that movie.
Yeah,
he throws his car keys on the. Did you see Boiler Room? Have you seen Boiler Room?
Oh yeah, it reminded me so much of like Glengarry Glen Ross with really good written performances.
Exactly.
And totally solid ensemble. And yeah, I can see how Wolf would remind you of that.
But yeah, it's based on that. Boiler Room is based on the same story that Wolf of Wall Street is based on. But Wolf of Wall Street, I think, is going to play it closer to the chest, closer to what actually happened. A guy, Jordan Belfort, who was, you know, a schemer. He opened up chop shops on Long Island that sort of sold fake stocks and did stuff like that and made gross amounts of money. And so it's about him. Leonardo DiCaprio plays him, and Jonah Hill plays his partner.
I hear Jonah Hill's a lot of fun.
Yeah, very eccentric in the movie. He looks extremely eccentric. And the two of them kind of make a lot of money doing some shady things. And eventually those shady things catch up to them. And Scorsese loves those stories. He loves those stories about men who scheme their way to the top and then just fall. And Goodfellas is one of those movies. And Casino is one of those movies. So, and you look at the trailers for Wolf of Wall Street, and he's got the whole thing, the voiceover. He's got the looking at the camera, explaining, hey, we made $1 million by the time I was 21. It just feels like Goodfellas. And so I'm just excited to see Scorsese return to that format and tell another story using that format just because of Goodfellas and how much it means to me growing up. And so, and it's good to see Scorsese doing another New York movie. And I live on Long Island. A lot of this story takes place on Long Island. So I'm looking forward to seeing how Scorsese shows Long Island. So, but yeah, those are our six movies, folks. Six
and
movies, you gotta see.
I think what it basically says is that there's something for everybody at the box office in the next coming weeks.
Yeah, not as much for kids. I think we have Walking with Dinosaurs on December 20th.
Right.
Other than that, you know, maybe The Secret Life of Walter Mitty might be something that you can take your preteen to or your teen to.
And even Mr. Banks. There really isn't that much stuff in Mr. Banks that's questionable. And if your kids have seen Mary Poppins and are, you know, up to the point where they would want to watch a movie about the making of that, I think that might interest them too. But obviously Frozen's still crushing it. Hunger Games is still crushing it for kids. So this us.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun. It would be fun to go watch Mary Poppins and then take your kids to see Saving Mr. Banks. That's a nice little double feature for
you. We should do a little double feature in theaters. Some theaters should program that.
Yeah, we're gonna do a feature on the best double features of 2013 to watch. We're gonna grab some writers and we're gonna ask them, you know, if you were programming a double feature of 2013 movies, what would it be and why? And so we're gonna give you some options if you have some time to kill over the holiday season. You're hanging out with your family. You want to watch some 2013 movies, we will program some really cool double features for you. So keep an eye out for that later in the month. Sean O'Connell, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. We have a whole month to go. We got a lot of things to talk about. We have a holiday season. We have a year end. We have our favorite movies of the year. I'm shivering thinking about how much fun we're going to have. Thank you very much for joining me.
Always a pleasure. Thank you everybody for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you everybody for listening to us, and enjoy your weekend at the movies.